Hello? Okay. It's for you, James.
Hey, James. This is James from the future.
Just wanted to give you a call and let you know that...
Puberty can be tough, but you can get through it.
So I just wanted to let you know that everything's going to be okay and...
I love you.
You got the wrong number.
I grew up in a generation where smartphones were a new thing and everyone in my class had one, except for me. My parents never got me one because they didn't want me to access the internet on a device that could fit in my pocket because they were super strict and didn't want me looking at... internet stuff?
Which backfired horribly.
So they never gave me a smartphone. In fact, I didn't even get my first cell phone until I was 16 years old. Now, as an adult who uses a cell phone every day, I don't know how I survived for 16 years without one. I think when I was younger, if I was ever in a situation where I needed to call my parents, I would just ask the nearest person if I could borrow their phone. Now, if there's any parents watching this who haven't given their children a cell phone yet, take it from a guy on the internet with no children. You should get them one. It doesn't have to be a smart one, you can just give them your standard drug dealer phone, but you should at least give them a cell phone in case there's an emergency and they need to call you or the police. The only downside I can think of giving your child a phone is they'll end up spending too much time on it, so you should just turn off their service from time to time, I don't know. When I turned 16 and finished up my sophomore year of high school, I got my very first cell phone. An LG Cosmos 2.
I didn't grow up in the 90s. Everyone else had iPhones, but I was the only one with a phone that had a keyboard on it.
And with that cell phone, I've had a couple of incidences where sometimes a random person would call me, thinking I was someone else, and then wouldn't admit they're wrong. And that's how you segue into the theme of this month's video. This first story happened when I was working at Subway. That's right, another Subway story! Hashtag Subway 4, it wasn't good enough to be in the other three. So, it was 5 minutes until closing, and we get a phone call on the Subway phone. I pick it up and say, thank you for calling Subway, how may I help you? I was supposed to say, this is James, how may I help you? But I wasn't about to tell this random stranger my name.
Idiot.
Anyway, the other person on the line said, hey, what time do you guys close? In 5 minutes. Is it alright if I show up late? I just need gas. And being the good employee that I was totally willing to make this guy's sandwich over the phone, let him pick it up after we closed, and then I wouldn't ring him up and just pocket the money. I'm just kidding, I wouldn't do that. That's a crime. Please don't sue me. So I said, yeah, I can do that. What kind of sandwich do you want? And he said, I just need gas. Oh, don't worry, sir. This sandwich will give you plenty of gas. I mean, do you want chips or something? No, he said. I just need gas. I was a little confused. Okay, yes. So you'll get gas, then are you gonna stop by and pick up a sandwich? And he said, I don't want a sandwich. And then it hit me. Even though the first thing I ever said to this guy was, thank you for calling Subway, I think he thought he was talking to a gas station. So I said, sir, this is a Subway?
Oh.
And I never got the chance to tell him that gas pumps don't close. This next story happened when I was at home and I got a call from a number I didn't recognize. Now, I've had friends tell me that they don't answer the phone to any number they don't recognize, but my anxiety won't let me do that. What if it's your bank calling saying your account got hacked? What if it's your grandma, because why would you have her saved in your phone? Or what if it's your Nigerian uncle who wants to give you his collection of gold bars and needs your information for a wire transfer? You just never know, so I always pick up the phone. So I answered it, and it was this woman asking for a Lawrence. And I said, oh, I'm not, that's, you have the wrong number. And she goes, isn't this 416-295? That's obviously not a real number, so don't try calling it. And I said, no, this is 416-293, because that's my phone number. Again, that's not actually a valid phone number, so please don't call it. And she goes, 3? I don't think I pressed 3. And I don't know what to say to this woman, because my number is 416-293. It's really not. But she doesn't think she pushed 3. So I don't know how she's talking to me right now. Unless she did. So I said, well, obviously,
You did. And then I made a comic about the whole situation because I thought the internet would think it was funny. This next story happened not too long ago. I got a call from a number I didn't recognize at 9:30 in the morning, and I was lying in my bed, asleep. And most people would agree that you're supposed to be awake and productive at 9:30. And I didn't want whoever this stranger was thinking I'm lazy, so I had to answer the phone with my best, I've been awake for several hours voice. Hello?
You're going to have to come quickly. Timmy fell down the well, Vance.
What?
I said you're going to have to come quickly because Timmy fell down the well, Vance.
I could tell it was a woman on the phone, but it was either her accent or the phone being buggy or I just had woken up, but I could not understand anything she was saying. But I could make out one word, which was Vance. So, I did not have a lot to go off of. I said, I think you have the wrong number. Okay. Goodbye.
No, don't hang up the phone. You gotta come quickly, because Timmy fell out.
Well, I should probably get the day started, I thought as I went back to sleep. But then immediately I got a call from the same number, and I thought, okay, maybe if this person is calling again, even after I explicitly told her she had the wrong number, maybe it's not a wrong number after all. Maybe there's something else going on. Maybe it's an emergency, so maybe, talk to me.
Hold it, Vance.
Okay. I can't understand anything you're saying. So then this woman must have handed the phone to her friend because a different voice started talking and I could actually understand her and I'll never forget what she said, which was,
Vance, no one thinks
that you're funny.
And even though I'm not Vance, that kinda hurt. So I stated the obvious, which was, yes, I am. And also I'm not Vance. And she said,
no, Lance.
So this whole time, these two have been looking for a Lance. So I told this woman, I'm not Lance either. And she said,
well, this is the number they gave me.
Okay, if she had said it like, oh, I'm sorry, this is the number they gave me. I didn't mean to call you, stranger. Also, I do think you're funny and enjoy your videos. Then that would have been totally fine. She's just shifting the blame to someone else. But instead, she sounded so condescending, like I was wasting her time. Well, this is the number they gave me, and they can't be wrong, so you must be the real Lance. So I said, well, they must have given it to you wrong. Look, I'm too tired to be polite. But then she hung up on me. Like this woman just basically called a random person, said, you're not funny, and then hung up. So I decided to call her back and said, hey, I just found the real Lance. He's the funniest guy I ever met, and he told me he doesn't give his phone number out to rude pieces of shit. I'm just kidding on that last part. I thought about doing it, but then I went back to sleep. I didn't do it. And then someone on the internet found my phone number, and I changed it. And whoever has my old number is probably getting a lot of calls from strangers and people I went to high school with. Sorry about that.
Yeah, I'm not really sure you should do a video about Arizona. I mean, only people from Arizona will think it's funny. I'm gonna do it anyway. So if you saw my Bashes video, which I think was the fifth one in the France trip series, you'll know that I live in Arizona. So cool, I'm gonna talk about it. Pros and cons of living in Arizona. Pro, we got cacti. And in fact, we, and a tiny bit of Mexico, are the only place in the world with saguaro cactuses. I mean cacti. Boom! And as an extra bonus, they look really funny with Christmas decorations on them. Con. Not a lot of trees. Which, I mean, who needs trees? They just stand there. All they do is provide shade and oxygen. I guess you could climb them. I don't need that. Instead of trees, we have these things. Pro, we have In-N-Out. Okay, that store technically originated in California, but it's moved to here, and it's delicious. I actually applied there, and I got an interview. They didn't hire me, though. You guys are missing con, the heat. It's unbearable. In the summer, you can expect the weather to be in triple digits. We don't have to be told not to leave our dog or babies inside cars, because we're already dying of heat stroke while the air conditioning is on. Pro, we don't have daylight savings. Which might seem like a good thing, but the only reason we don't is because con, the sun is trying to kill you. Yes, it's hot here. Pro, it's... I think we got the Grand Canyon, which is like one of the seven wonders of the world, I guess. And it can be seen from the Great Wall of China. I'm just kidding, that's not true. Oh, I got it. Pro. Citrus. We grow oranges, lemons, and grapefruits. They only get ripe in the winter, though. These are actually part of the three C's of Arizona. We have citrus, copper, cats, cacti, and cattle. And calcium, because of all the sunshine we're getting. Con. It hardly rains here. Yes, that's a bad thing, because I never learned how to close an umbrella. Okay, that's an exaggeration. Of course I know how to close an umbrella, but it was a very hard learning curve. And Arizona was not built to get rained on. When we do get rain, streets flood, schools close, and trees, well, these kinds of trees, fall. Pro. So, yeah, the summer can be unbearable, but winter is a total breeze. Winter is when the weather is perfect. While everyone else has to deal with stuff like this, here all we get is ripe lemons perfect for making cold lemonade with. And because our winters are so not really wintry, we have a bunch of old people who move down here in the winter and then move back to their summer home in Minnesota or whatever. They're like birds who migrate south in the winter, but like snowbirds, which is coincidentally what we call them. So really it's sort of a pro slash con. On one side, we have tolerable weather, but on the other side, old people. You know, I can't really think of any more pros, so we're just gonna say more cons. Apparently, Phoenix was ranked number 10 on the rudest cities in America, which, okay, how do you measure a city's rudeness level? Was the person making this list, like, seeking out rude people and comparing them to other cities? Like, oh, this person in Phoenix called me a piece of shit, but this person in Wyoming only called me a piece of crap. So, I guess Phoenix just has more rude people. Add it to the list. And also on the same list, we apparently had some of the worst drivers around, which I can sort of see because everyone here drives 7 to 15 miles over the speed limit. But I really hate slow drivers, so it's kind of a pro for me, but I guess it's a con. Also, did you guys know that a haboob is another name for a dust storm? And I know this because we've had to use that word before. And because we call them that, dust storms become 20 times more awesome. In fact, we're probably excited to see haboobs just so we can make jokes about them. As soon as we see a cloud of dust on the horizon, we all go, ah, guys, it's a haboob! You guys remember us? This is what we call it. And then we go inside and make jokes like, oh man, this is one massive haboob. And lastly, probably the worst con of all, the heat. I know I already mentioned it three times, but I don't think I've really driven my point home here. It's so hot here. I am literally sweating right now as I'm recording this, and that's not on the script.
Please get me out.
And some of you watching are probably like, but James, it's a dry heat, right? That means it's not as bad. Let me answer that question with another question, and then an answer. Do you know what else a dry heat is? Ovens. And volcanoes. And that's where I live.
I don't know if any of you guys had to do this in high school, but in my high school, you had to take a physical education credit to graduate. So normally, to get it out of the way, in 9th grade, all the boys would take PE, and all the girls would take dance. But sometimes, the really white boys would take dance. And you could always point them out during dance recitals. So I actually took PE my sophomore year because I went to a preparatory school in 9th grade. But that was okay because I fit in quite perfectly with all the other skinny white boys. And there's like this long moment in the first 10 minutes of class where all you do is sit in the locker room and wait until coach says, okay, let's do this. So one day we all got bored and just started flicking water bottle caps, you know, just the caps and the little whoop-ah! We just started flicking, you know, like little tiny frisbees. We took caps from the trash and we would just whoop-poo, shoot them at each other, you know, whoop-ah! And it was all fun, you know, and no one really got hurt, and I'm pretty sure I'm the one who started it, but whatever. And then, when we did our physical education class, it was, like, extra hard. Like, we ran two laps instead of one. And we had to do wall sits while holding medicine balls. And then afterwards, when we were all sweaty and tired, the teacher goes, you want to know why today was extra hard? It's because you're flicking water bottle caps at each other. What? Fast forward a couple, I don't know, a month. And these two kids get the idea to play a game called Bodies. And if you aren't familiar with that game, it's a game where you punch someone, that's it. You're not allowed to hit their face though, just their bodies. Which is why it's called Bodies. And you'd think at least one of us would be like, hey you guys. Oh wait, their voices should be squeaky.
Hey you guys, coach didn't like that we were throwing water bottle caps before. Maybe we shouldn't do this.
So, you know, I obviously couldn't let that happen without watching. And these two kids start playing, and one kid
isn't even punching back, which is a strategy I would not use playing that particular game. And then all of a sudden, the dude taking the punches falls off his feet and hits his head on the hard tile and doesn't get up. Did I win? So we're a couple of young bros and we're like, hey, bro, 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 bro. So we had to tell the teacher, and the teacher got the nurse, and a little time passed, and at that point he did wake up a little, and the coach asked him what happened. And he knew he would get in trouble if he told the truth, so he lied and said,
I don't know, I just passed out and got all these punch marks.
Although it is possible he could have legitimately forgot. And then the coach asked the class what happened, and everyone was like, oh, yeah, geez, man, yeah, he just passed out. Yeah, I saw him. He just flopped down. And we almost got away with it, except one kid, I forget his first name, but his last name was like for Wilkins or something. Ugh, and he had the stupidest bowl cut, too. Ow, so stupid. He tells the coach, they were playing bodies, and person A falcon punched person B. And then we already know we're in a whole heck of a trouble. But the nurse called the PE teacher and said, this kid needs to get his stuff. And coach said to the class, someone needs to get this kid his stuff. I got it! I'll get his stuff. And I'm told that the class had to do lunges down the track field. But I wouldn't know, because I took my sweet time getting him his stuff. And then a year later, I heard our PE teacher got fired. For separate reasons.
Hey, England! For the entirety of this video, I'm going to be calling this sport football and this sport soccer, okay? Well, blimey, mate, we got a cheeky bugger here. We do, we do. Well, pip-pop cheerio. Hope a stiffy wanks your knockers. God save the queen. What did I just say? So, the theme of this video, sports. Either you love them or you hate them. Or you have some other third opinion. Growing up, my family was never big on sports. We never watched any games on the telly. I'm sorry, I still got some British in me. And me and my dad never went out and played catch. He also never taught me how to shave. He was gone a lot. He always talked about Heather. Okay, but I did play soccer for a couple years when I was like 7. I was on the green team. Sports at that age aren't even like sports. It's just parents wanting you to go outside more. Being a goalie on a soccer team when you're that age is super stressful. The whole team is counting on you. Even stopping a ball that's gently rolled towards you is difficult. One time, the other team we were playing was so sucky that all the players spent the whole game on their half of the field. And I was the goalie for my team, and I remember just sitting down and picking at the grass. Soccer was the only sport that I've been on a team for. Well, I mean, I'm not counting the track team that I was on for only 2 days. There is this kid I mentioned a long time ago in my Boy Scout video named Micah. Now, he was a soccer fanatic. I wonder what he's doing. Okay, England, we have this holiday called Thanksgiving. We celebrate it because it's when we left your lame country. Don't ask what we did next. So on Thanksgiving, for some reason, it's a tradition to play football before you go and eat food. So while the ladies stay inside and cook the meal, the men go outside and throw the pigskin around. I'm just kidding, you guys. I'm not a sexist. But I mean, that is what happens. So one time during Thanksgiving, I was a little kid, like 11 or 12, and I was playing football with my dad and his other 40-year-old friends. So me being the littlest, I wasn't particularly the best player. But while we were playing, I freaking caught the ball. I caught it! And then I just started booking it across the field. I've probably never ran so quickly my entire life. And I actually made it. I scored a home run.
What?
And that, to me, was such a pivotal point in my life. I felt so accomplished. Me, a little kid, scored a goal against a bunch of adults. I would think back to it if I was ever feeling sad. Like, oh, I failed this math test, but, one time I scored a basket against a bunch of adults when I was 12. But I remember I was a senior in high school, and I was just driving, and then the thought came to me, they probably let me score that touchdown. They were going easy on me. Man, growing up sucks. I was never all that competitive as a child. Well, okay, I was never competitive when it came to sports.
It's just a game, guys. We're supposed to have fun. Winning's not that important.
Sports are good at that age, though. They promote physical activity, you can make friends, you might like the sport and want to pursue it more, and it's not a big deal if you suck. I'm totally making my future kid play a sport. That is, if I have kids.
What if I die alone?
People make the comparison that some people watch gaming channels for the same reason that others watch sports. You're watching someone play a video game? Why do you watch someone play when you can just go to the computer and play it yourself? Now replace the word video game with sport and outside with computer, and it's the same thing. Loading Artist made a very good comic about the point I'm trying to make. I'll just read it.
What are you doing?
Watching this guy play a game. It's pretty funny.
Wait, so you aren't even playing?
Yeesh, what a waste of time.
And then he goes and watches a sports game. Man, Loading Artist is so much cooler than me. I've said this before, but he was such a big inspiration to me when I was first starting out. I just wanted to say that again. Go read all of his comics right now. I just want to say it's fine if you watch sports. Granted, I won't watch them with you because they're incredibly boring. You want to know why gaming channels work? It's because they play different games. Even Captain Sparkles, who mostly plays Minecraft and also who I love, by the way. And I did buy a t-shirt to prove my point, but it's still in the mail. See, look, I bought a t-shirt and I bought sunglasses right here. So I just want to give a big shout out to themakershop.com, who's taking a million years to ship me my Captain Sparkle shirt. It was going to be so cool. I was going to say, I bought a t-shirt to prove my point. And then I was going to flick the sunglasses that I also bought down.
Notice me, senpai.
This email says it's going to take 3 to 7 business days to ship. Well, yesterday was the 13th business day.
So what is it, Jordan? 7 or 13?
So I bought this just so I have something physical to show my love for Captain Sparkles.
I've been watching all of his videos since TNT.
Oh, he's changed it.
But the point is,
he changes around the format and the rules of his Let's Plays with all the different maps he plays. It's different for every video, even his role-playing ones, which I'm still waiting for part 5 to come out. Like, imagine if there was a gaming channel that only played the first Super Mario game. It might be fun to watch at first, especially if they're good at playing the game, and it might be fun to watch how other people play it and see what they do. But for 50 years? Don't you think that would get a little boring after a while? I mean, only so much can happen, and that's what I think sports is like sometimes. It's the same game, same rules, over and over and over. Like, spice some things up once in a while. What if for basketball there were like mystery boxes like in Mario Kart and you could grab them and that would give you an advantage? How about if a team is losing, they get some wacky, hilarious handicap depending on how far behind they are, so it's not hopeless for them?
But James, sports is supposed to measure your talent.
Whatever. It gets boring to watch. I can understand if the teams are neck and neck and it comes down to one final play like what it does in every sports movie. That's why they have to use that plot device in all the sports movies to make it interesting. But a lot of times, sports aren't like that. Like if one team is leading by 50 points, why even bother watching the last 5 minutes of the game? I would rather watch any Air Bud movie than a sports game because stuff actually happens in those movies. And they're different each time. And there's a dog wearing shoes in it. I just want to say for the record, if my kid grew up to be a professional athlete, then I'll watch sports. But only the games that they play in, and only the games that are interesting.
Ugh, why is it socially acceptable to know everything about sports and dress up, but it isn't acceptable to dress up in fursuits and go to cons?
You see, I don't think it's acceptable to do either of those things. You're both weird.
But don't let me stop you. You do you. Follow your dreams.
Okay, let's talk about some stories. In grade school, I was put in the honor classes for my academic achievement, which did not help me whatsoever. It probably hurt me when I went to college. But that's not what we're talking about. Anyway, so during recess, the whole class would play kickball. Kickball is a fun sport. Anyone can play it, but it takes a pro to be good at it.
What?
There was this girl in my class who was the best kickball player, and then later, when she grew up, she became the valedictorian of my high school and went to Harvard. I'm proud of her. Also, my ginger friend and Nick Jiggly, who I've mentioned before, he also got to speak during graduation. Actually, okay, so Nick had this thing where his hands would shake. I don't think it was Parkinson's. I actually emailed him about it, and he said, I asked a doctor, and he said it's just a mild tremor. Ha. So he's probably fine. But whenever he would give a presentation in front of the class, his hands would be shaking, and people would think, oh, he's nervous. But no, actually, he's the most extroverted and outgoing kid that I knew. He just had a condition. Well, that was a pretty long tangent. What are we talking about? Sports? Oh, yeah, kickball. Since everyone in the class was kind of already a nerd, I wasn't usually the last one to be picked on a team. I was usually the fourth or third to last. It's so nerve-wracking when the last five are still standing and you think, don't let me be last, don't let me be last. And then you get picked and it's like, ha! They think I'm better than you. Which I'm not, actually. One time, I think I was like 15 or something, and me and this big group of people went to a sports complex. And we were having fun, playing games and running around, and then boom! A soccer ball just whacked me in the face. I got a bloody nose and I couldn't stand up without toppling over for a few seconds. And then I went to a bathroom, you know, freshened up. What sucked was that it was a girl that hit me and people made jokes like, oh, you got hit by a girl. It still hurt, okay?
So I sat out for a couple of minutes, I waited until I stopped seeing flashing colors. Then, like the man that I am, I went back and played some more. And not 5 minutes go by when it happened again! Different person this time. But after the second time, I was completely out. I mean, I wasn't unconscious, but I couldn't get up. I remember my brother had to carry me out on his shoulder.
Pinatas. I love pinatas. It's perfect for when you want to beat something to death, but also want candy.
Why do they make it look so pretty? Most of the time when you're playing with it, it looks like this.
What the, Alex, what are you doing here?
I just wanted to know what it would feel like to have a billion subscribers.
No, go, get out. Go back to It's Alex Clark and wait your turn.
Okay, fine.
Don't come back unless you have cake. Pinatas. Here's a story that involved me when I was a first grader in a pinata. I don't know if any of you guys did this in your elementary school, but when it was someone's birthday, that kid would bring treats for the whole class. And then the whole class would take 10 minutes, stop everything they're doing, and then pass out the pastries to everyone. How come we don't do that anymore? In high school, depending on the teacher, they don't do anything for your birthday party. And in college, heck, no one even talks to you. So I have a twin sister, and we were in the first grade together. So when it came time for our birthdays, we had to celebrate two birthdays. It's double birthdays. We gotta do something extra special. My mom had an idea. Let's do a pinata. But since my mom is super cheap, she decided to make her own pinata out of paper mache. And it turns out making homemade pinatas are easy. All you gotta do is blow up a balloon, cover it in paper mache, wait for it to harden, pop the balloon inside, cut a hole open, fill it with candy, cover the hole back up with paper mache, paint it, and then beat it senseless. Simple. So my mom went above and beyond and made a sphere pinata for our entire first grade class. Me and my sister's birthday is towards the end of the school year, and in elementary school, that last week of school, like, you don't even do anything, it doesn't even count. So hopefully my teacher wasn't too mad at what was about to transpire. My sister and I were just pumped the whole school day, because we helped build the pinata, we helped paint it, and now we're gonna help beat it to pieces. The teacher eventually called out,
"Alright class, James's mom made us a pinata, so we're all gonna go outside and whack it!"
Oh yes, this was perfect! It was our birthday, we gotta beat up a pinata at school. I have the best mom. Me and my sister got a swing first because we're the birthday boys. We didn't end up breaking it, but I wasn't mad. Let these other non-birthday people have some fun. I'm a generous guy. Hey, in the end, I just want the candy. So the next guy goes up, then the next, and then eventually everyone got a turn. Well, a pinata's supposed to break, ain't it? Apparently, my mom was a little precautious and put a few extra layers of paper mache on the pinata, so that way, everyone would get a turn! Yay! And apparently, she also overestimated the strength of paper mache and first graders. But did this teacher let the whole class down? No. You know what she did? Bless her soul, she said,
"All right, class, we're all gonna take turns, throwing this against a curb!"
I mean, what other option did this teacher have? She could have stabbed it, but I don't think that would have been very fun. Looking back, she might have just been wanting to speed up the process, but as a group of 7-year-olds, we had a blast. Also, I'm glad the pinata was not in the shape of an animal, because imagine how traumatizing that would have been as 7-year-olds to curb stomp a unicorn. We would have been like little tiny mob bosses. Alright, Tony, you ready to give up the candy? Such a shame you feel that way, Tony. Bruce? I'm glad my mom was so thoughtful putting all those layers of paper mache in the pinata, because we all got a turn throwing the pinata on the ground. I remember getting so into it, I remember jumping up in the air before smashing the pinata onto the pavement. Nothing was going to get in between me and whatever candy was in there. Pretty soon though, we were all getting pretty antsy. Everyone was like, I was promised there'd be candy. Eventually, after what felt like an eternity of beating this pinata into the ground, we got a rip. I don't know if you guys saw the first episode of The Walking Dead. It's actually the only episode I've ever seen. And there's a scene in the first episode where the zombies rip open a horse and eat its organs. Well, that was pretty much what it looked like after we got a rip in the pinata. I don't remember what candy was in there, but hopefully it was worth it. And that was probably the best and worst pinata I ever broke.
A Pokemon Nuzlocke is a set of rules that turn a normal playthrough of Pokemon into a hardcore playthrough of Pokemon. You're only allowed to catch the first Pokemon you see per route, and if any of them faint, they actually don't live anymore, and you can never use them again. The game I will be nuzlocking will be Pokemon Ruby. Not because I'm copying Jaden, but because Gen 3 is my favorite generation, and out of the three games, Ruby was the one I played as a kid and bought with my own money. It was $40. Imagine paying that much for a copy of the game now. Also, full disclosure, I've seen other PokeTubers who have a deep, uncanny knowledge of this game and use calculators to make the best, most optimal plays, but I'm not quite at that level yet, so I might make choices that some could consider suboptimal.
I thought grass was, like, super effective against water. Why is he super effective against me?
But if you can forgive me and look past all that, then let's get out of this truck and start our adventure.
Let's see. Someone's already picked Torchic, and when I played this as a kid, I picked Treecko. So that means we're left with Kipmud. After defeating my rival's Treecko, I headed to Oldale Town and caught my first Pokemon that would be joining our team, Floof the Poochyena. I'm guessing naming Pokemon after pets is very common in Nuzlocke. By the way, this is how Floof's very first fight went.
Oh! Oh! Oh my god.
Hey, do you want to learn how to catch Pokemon?
No. I'm good.
Well, that's too bad. First, you want to get him weak by throwing tiny rocks at him. Traveling through Route 104, I caught
a Zigzagoon.
Igzy the Zigzagoon. I'm probably not going to train her up or anything, but she will be useful teaching useless HMs to. What's that, Igzy? You have an ability where you pick up random objects? And you picked up a revive? Oh, Igzy. I can't use these! Wandering through Petalburg Woods, some guy asked me if I'd seen any Pokemon named
Shroomish!
The main reason Gen 3 is my favorite is because the best Pokemon ever, Breloom, makes his debut in this game. Why, if I found a Shroomish in this forest, I would probably react like this.
This guy was being truthful.
I named Shroomish Goat because not only is he the greatest of all time, but because I was also working on this other video about goats, so I had a lot of goats on the mind. We made it to Rustboro Town and challenged Roxanne, the rock-type gym leader, but thankfully we picked the water starter, so, you know, Kidmup, do your thing. I caught a Talo on Route 116, and keeping with the naming Pokemon after pets theme, I named him RE2. Not to spoil anything, but don't get too attached to RE2, Jaden. We sailed to Juford Town and saw that the second gym was a fighting-type gym, so that meant fighting-type weakness. It was RE2's time to shine.
He's, like, actually a higher level. I didn't like that. I didn't like that. He's too high of a level.
Despite being a lower level, we decided to wing it and managed to defeat everyone's Pokemon, only having to tap out at Brawly's Makahuita, which Kidmup mopped the floor with. Hey, when did you start walking on two legs, Kidmup? The next HM we learn is this terrible move, Flash. The only thing Flash is good for is lighting up a dark cave that technically isn't even required to progress through the game if you know where you're going. I, however, do not. Currently, Goat is the only one on the team who can learn Flash. But I'm like 80% sure once a Pokemon learns an HM move, they can't unlearn it. So I really don't want to teach this S-tier Pokemon an unforgettable F-tier move. Oh boy, an Abra! I bet he can learn Flash. Oh boy, a Zubat! Okay, I'm kind of fudging the rules here. This Zubat wasn't technically the first Pokemon I saw on this route, but does it even count as an encounter if all you do is look at a Pokemon and then they teleport away?
Excuse me?
Look, I just need this useless Pokemon to learn this unrequired move. Zubat, I'm calling you Mr. Flash and immediately teaching you...
No!
Goat, you can learn Flash.
Yay!
After clearing out Team Magma from a museum, we were ready to take on Watson, the electric-type gym leader. Luckily, we picked the water ground starter, so... Kidmup, do your thing. Now what? Do I go here? Here? How did I get here? During my wandering, both the Pokemon I named after pets evolved into bigger versions of themselves, and Goat learned Headbutt.
Can I get rid of Flash?
No!
Hey, lady, I'm kind of lost, so I'm entering random houses and asking NPCs where I should go.
Oh, you have Harbor Mail? I'll trade you that for my coin case.
Coin case?
You know, for gambling.
Gambling? Listen, I don't have a problem. The reason I'm this excited is because one of the prizes you can win at the casino is a Pokemon. A Pokemon that may help me build the perfect team. So, before I checked what the prizes actually were, I bought 500 coins for a measly 10,000 Pokédollars.
Just TMs? Just dolls? I just wasted a lot of money, didn't I?
Good news, though. Goat evolved into his perfect form and learned Mach Punch.
Right.
Eventually, I talked to the right NPC, taught Iggsy Rock Smash, and while exploring a fiery path, I caught my first fire-type Pokemon.
Okay.
Numel.
Let's go, man.
Even though Numels can be found in the desert, have a big hump on their back, and evolve into something called Camerupt, for some reason, I never looked at this Pokemon and thought, camel. I always thought, fire cow. So that's why I named her Cooked Beef. Then, on Route 114, we encountered a Zangoose.
Hello!
I have no clue what this Pokemon does, but it looks way cooler than all the Oddishes and tiny birds I kept running into, so it had to be awesome. Cooked Beef, the 9 levels you have on this goose are more than enough to weaken it. Hit him with an ever-
Oh, please don't. Oh!
Cooked Beef! So, my only fire type died to a quick attack that did 50 damage. Zangoose, or should I say Beef Eater, you can join the team for now, but just know, we could have killed you at any point. It was a challenge not to kill you. We headed up a mountain and fought Maxi, the leader of Team Magma, who had his own Floof Pokemon, which Goat took care of, and he had his own evolved Cooked Beef. I sure wish I had one of those on the team. Hey, Beef Eater, why don't you make yourself useful and fight that Crobat?
Okay, that's kind of cool.
As we headed down the mountain, who did I encounter but...
Who's the new Pokemon?
Another Numel. Immediately, I abandoned Beef Eater to make room for Return of King. Before we take on gym number 4, I think I figured out a way to get Goat to forget the move Flash without having to beat him over the head with a 2x4. A little Pidgey told me that Goat was about to learn a new move at his next level. So by placing him in the Pokemon daycare and doing some light cardio outside, he'll level up, learn the new move, and forget Flash. And my plan worked like a charm.
Yeah.
It really sucks that this is the only way to get Pokemon to forget an HM move. You'd think they'd have some, I don't know, a move deleter NPC or something. Gosh. Now you'd think that since I picked the water starter, that the fire type gym wouldn't be an issue. But it was. Floof and I quickly learned why biting lava was a bad idea.
Okay!
Thankfully, Kidmup, who I don't know why I didn't send out first, took out both of Flannery's Slugmas with no issue. But then, she sent out Torkoal. Even though Kidmup was using a super effective move, he only did this much damage. Meanwhile, Torkoal's Body Slams were doing this much damage. And paralyzing us. Okay, Goat, I know you're the goat, but you understand why you can't fight a fire turtle, right? RE2, looks like you're up. Finish her off with a steel wing.
Ah! Dude!
RE2! No!
What do we do?
None of you are great choices. What I really need is a turn to heal up Kidmup, but...
Hey, Iggsy. Are you aware of the concept... taking one for the team? Given the dire circumstances, this felt like the best choice. Sorry, Iggsy.
With Kidmup healed, we managed to get Torkoal's health really low, but then Kidmup refused to finish the fight because he was, in his words, immobilized by love. Kidmup, I know you're letting this turtle body slam you on purpose, and you're sick for it!
Do you really think we have a future together?
Okay, Goat, I know this is a fire turtle, but she's mostly using body slams. Could you please punch this turtle's head off without falling in love? We earned our 4th gym badge, but it wasn't without some casualties. RE2 and Iggsy, we wouldn't have made it this far without you. Thanks for everything. We traveled into a sandstorm where I picked up two Pokemon, this fossil, and this weird Pokemon I've never seen before, Baltoy. Alright, King, my second chance at a fire type. I know this isn't your natural habitat, but why don't we train here in the desert for a bit? Oh, you found a Baltoy. I just caught one of those. I'm not sure what its moves are, though.
Nuts.
God! Okay, team. I know everyone is upset this thing shares a species with the Pokemon who blew up King, but it possesses psychic abilities that I believe could be very useful. So, please everyone give a warm welcome to King Eater. No one step on it. We headed back to Petalburg City and faced gym number 5, my dad. Also, I brought Odd One-ish just in case we had another Iggsy-type situation.
Am I an integral member of the team?
You sure are, bud. Despite a few close calls...
Who? Dude! 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 Finish him off. No!
Everyone, including Odd One-ish, made it out alive.
Oh my god.
Good thing we have free healthcare. I don't know what I'd do if someone took away my free healthcare. Not right now, Goat. Across the water on Route 118, I caught Pikachu the Electrike.
Great.
I don't know, he's electric like Pikachu, and his head kind of looks like pickles, so... Whatever, having an electric type on the team is huge. After inspecting all the Pokemon I had, I figured Mr. Flash's flying poison moves could be useful. So I evolved them into Golbat, and then... Here you go, daycare lady!
Alright, my favorite Pokemon, who wants some ice cream? Gosh, I love you guys. I couldn't ask for a better team right here.
At Fort Tree City, we were ready to take on Winona, the flying-type gym leader. Wait, this weird lizard's blocking our path. Kidmup, can you... Oh, cool, you're back on four legs again. Also, Pikachu, why are you blue? The only thing that stood between me and Winona was this incredibly hard two-piece puzzle.
Hmm. All right, through this. Oh, figured it out.
Pikachu was able to spark Winona's Swellow, and Kidmup, through sheer willpower, tanked all of Altaria's earthquakes, narrowly avoiding death by 8 hit points. Good work, Kidmup. Pikachu, you know what to do. I found a TM for Ice Beam on an abandoned ship, and... King Eater, you can learn Ice Beam? I'm sorry it's taken me this long to realize how awesome of a Pokemon you are. You know, King Eater, with you on the team, I think we'll be okay without a fire type. I entered Lily Cove City, and my rival wanted a rematch. Kidmup knocked out her Swellow, no problem, but then she sent out Grovyle. Ooh, I know the perfect matchup for this. King Eater, why don't you show this grass type that new move you learned?
Dude! Ah! Are you gonna use a hyper potion? No! No!
I can't believe I got that upset at losing a Pokemon that before this challenge I had never even considered playing with. If any members of the Claydol lover community are watching, I'm sorry, I didn't know he hated grass. All right, team, we're not fighting any more gyms until each one of you is in peak physical shape. Floof, why haven't you evolved into Houndoom yet? What about this fossil? Is this fossil any good? We picked the plant one. We got the plant. What about Mr. Flash? Has anyone seen Mr. Flash? Why hasn't that loser evolved yet? Hey, buddy. So listen. We're friends, right? You know, Goat had to stay in the daycare once. Yeah, it was to forget the move... Flash. Look, Mr. Flash, I know I technically shouldn't have even caught you, and I named you after a garbage move I thought you could learn, but I want you to evolve so you can be the best version of you on the team. Don't you want to join the team? I have this soothing bell you can hold on to. Welcome to the team, Mr. Flash. With the team stronger than ever, I surfed my way to an island that had a Pokemon graveyard inside a tall building, and for the first time ever, I could actually grieve with the other trainers. That was a great battle, dude.
Yeah, it was. Here's some money.
So, Kidmup was holding an amulet coin, so you actually owe me 600. We defeated more Team Magma grunts at the top of the tower, and on our way down, I caught what I thought was going to be a super awesome Pokemon, but turned out to be a little disappointing.
Let's go!
My third chance at a fire type, my son, the Vulpix, which I immediately evolved into Ninetales. Why was she a disappointment? I don't know. You'd think a fire type would have no problems defeating a Gloom, but alas. I'm not saying Ninetales is a lame Pokemon. I'm saying mine specifically was. Floof and Kidmup easily cleared the Psychic Gym with Shadow Ball and Surf, and with that, we just have one more gym before we... Is the sun on fire? So I haven't really been paying attention to the story, and now the legendary Pokemon Groudon is angry. And as much as I would have liked to have Groudon on the team, I never found the Master Ball, so we're not risking it. Oh, hey, Wallace. Oh, you're the water-type gym leader? Oh, I hope my fighting grass Pokemon will be okay. No, you don't have to fight the Celio. I'll get Floof to do that. And with our eighth gym badge, we can finally travel through Victory Road and face the Elite Four.
Aren't you forgetting something?
I don't know how you want me to respond to that. This is it. Our final challenge. Each one of you has trained very hard. And as a reward, you'll each be receiving a piece of candy.
You get a candy. You get a candy. You get a candy. You get a candy. You get a candy. And you get a candy. This is it. This is gamer moment to the max.
Kidmup and Goat were able to finish off Sydney's Pokemon with their water, ice, and fighting moves. And my two dogs, Pikachu and Floof, crunched and bit all of Phoebe's ghost Pokemon. Pikachu might be cursed, though. Against Glacia, my son finally stopped being a disappointment and fire blasted her Glalie. Then I tried to get Goat to drain her Celio, forgetting he didn't like ice.
Oh, okay.
Ice and birds, those are his two big no-nos. Luckily, Kidmup was able to earthquake the rest of her Pokemon. Now it was time for the fourth member of the Elite Four, Drake. His Altaria was defeated by Kidmup and Floof, but they both took some damage. Against his Flygon, I sent out my son.
Okay, what about Fire Blast? You're green. Ah!
Then Flygon dug a hole in the ground, but by the time he came up, Mr. Flash was waiting for him and took him out with a fly. For Drake's next Flygon, I sent out Goat.
I don't think... because he doesn't like birds, and Flygon's a dragon?
Yeah, Flygon wasn't a bird, but I forgot a very important aspect about dragons.
Give him a dynamic punch. Nope, okay.
Oh, no! Oh, he knows flamethrower.
Fire and poison, those are his other two no-nos. Instead, Floop and Pikachu crunched Flygon's head off, and then I used Kidmup's last blizzard on Salamence.
Okay, I'm gonna need this blizzard to hit. Please? Yes! Yes! Yes!
We had done it.
Oh my goodness!
We had cleared four champions with some very close calls, but we are all still alive. Now it was time to face the fifth member of the Elite Four. What, you didn't know about the secret fifth boss that's in every Pokemon game? We had one more challenger. Steven. Steven sent out a Skarmory, which was the perfect lightning rod for Pikachu, then Kidmup took out Aggron with Surf, and my son defeated Cradlea with Iron Tail. Then Steven sent out a Metagross, and things got messy. I thought Kidmup's Surf would be super effective against this rock with legs. Turns out it wasn't.
Okay, here's what we're gonna do. I have an idea. Kidmup, if you can last another hit, that would be amazing. Oh, Hyper Beam!
Kidmup, my starter Pokemon, had been taken out.
Okay.
At least he got Metagross's health low enough that Floof could easily finish them off.
That's it.
Then Steven sent out his own King Eater, which I knew from personal experience they hated getting crunched.
I know this Pokemon. He hates getting crunched. I don't care about your special defense. You're getting crunched! It's probably because his special defense went up.
Floof eventually took down Claydol, even though Steven used a full restore on it three separate times.
Of course. Of course you were.
Stop it!
Which I get, man. I'm part of the Claydol lover community, too. Next was the last Pokemon we needed to defeat. Armaldo. One hit from its ancient power badly injured Floof. So for this final fight, I sent Goat to finish him off. Goat, because he's so awesome, poisoned Armaldo just by standing next to him, and then promptly sky-uppercutted him straight in the jaw, just barely knocking him out. Armaldo was clinging onto life when the unthinkable happened. Armaldo knew a bird move.
No! No!
No! Goat had made it so far into our journey, only to faint inches away from the finish line. I could have sent out a level 5 Zigzagoon and still would have won, because Armaldo died to poison on the very next turn.
The poison's gonna finish it off! Right? I didn't even have to... No! No! Not Goat!
By all accounts, Goat had defeated Armaldo, but he didn't make it! And neither did Kidmup! That was my starter and my favorite Pokemon! No, no, I don't want this trophy! I want Goat and Kidmup! Colleagues, friends, Wally, we gather together to honor two of the bravest Pokemon I know. One of them from the humble town of Little Root, and the other from a patch of grass in Petalburg Woods. Together, they faced gyms, rivals, and a plethora of wild Pokemon. And when the final challenge came, they didn't back down.
This sucks! I hated that!
And that's how my first Nuzlocke went.
Dude!
Grew Wumples, dude.
Dude!
Nothing, dude.
Dude!
Oh!
Dude! Stop falling in love! No! Tackle's so bad, dude.
Body is lava, dude.
Don't give him a chance to recover, dude.
Dude, stop it. Bash their skull in, dude.
That was my psychic ice type, dude.
So me and TJ had to sleep a whole night in the axe-smelling tent. Every breath I could taste the smell, and I just got more and more angry. The night finally passed, and I woke up early in the morning before everyone else, so I could start with my master revenge plan. Was I tired? Maybe. But that's a sacrifice you have to make for vengeance! Every campsite had a water fountain coming out of the ground, connected to a PVC pipe. I found the biggest Ziploc freezer bag I could find and started to fill it up with water. It was obviously a slow process. I had plenty of time to reconsider. To think about what TJ said or what would happen after I got my revenge. But nothing stopped me. I was a squeaky-voiced, hormone-induced monster. Once the bag was full, I went back to my tent and woke TJ up. He got up and I told him to watch this. TJ actually had no part in the revenge plan. I just wanted to suck him down with me. I think TJ actually didn't want to get revenge. I ran towards the mega log tent and hid behind a real tent that was right next to the log one. Everyone was still inside. TJ still had no clue what I was doing. Until I chucked the bag over the real tent. If everything went according to plan, the bag would break on the roof, and the water would sink through the openings, and then they'd be super wet, LOL. That was the plan. I never saw the carnage my creation had done. I was worried that I'd completely miss the log tent. I never played any sports as a kid, so just making it over the first tent would have been an accomplishment. But the fact that everyone started screaming and one boy yelled, "Micah, I'm gonna kill you!" I knew it must have been the most perfect shot. Did I stay around and laugh at their stupid, guilty faces? No. Me and TJ ran away as fast as we possibly could, without looking back. We sprinted off into the woods before any 15-year-old saw us. We just kept running and running, making sure to get as far away from camp as possible. And on the way, I kinda threw up a little. TJ, being the good friend that he was, thought I was unfit to run, so he decided that we should hide in some bushes. After about 5 minutes, nobody came.
Should we head back to camp? No. Yeah, you're right.
So we kept running, until we found the lake where scouts could canoe in. Me and TJ both thought this was a good place to stop, so we sat by the lake and talked for a few hours. Because in a week, TJ and his family were going to move away to China for 2 years, and I knew I wouldn't see him again for a long time, so I wanted to spend every moment I had with him. We were just a couple of bros being real with each other, skipping rocks and talking about our feelings. And then that night, the 15-year-old's tent got axe-bombed. So I guess it wasn't them. Oh, and remember how I threw up after running so much? Well, apparently there was a sickness going around camp that all the camp instructors got, and about 50% of the scouts got it too. And lo and behold, one of the 15-year-olds wasn't feeling so well when he went to bed that night. And then the sudden jolt awake and the cold water made him throw up.
Yay!
Did you know that 99% of everything I've ever said on this channel has been written out ahead of time, including the mispronunciation of the word percent? It would be 100% scripted, but, you know, the drawing challenge videos, you can't really script that kind of content, so... Or can you? But every other video has had a script, and that includes the worst video I've ever made, my very first one.
So you know those books you make in LA?
I'm gonna stop it right there because I physically cannot watch another nanosecond of my first video. I want to take it down so bad, but I'm keeping it up so you can see how much I've improved. Because like it or not, the very first thing you make of something is going to be bad. But you have to make the bad thing first so you know how to make things good. The point is, even that sad excuse of a video was scripted. And today, I want to talk about what goes on in the script writing process and how I get inspiration and some tips for writing better scripts. Because if I write something I'm not 100% happy with, then I'm stuck working on a crappy video for the next month. Like this one. People often tell me, "Oh, I want to make YouTube videos, but my life's super boring. I wish I could have an exciting life like yours." And I always respond with, "My most popular series is about me talking about working at a minimum wage small local sandwich shop. A script does not need to be an edge of your seat, high stakes level story. It needs to be an entertaining story. And I believe if told in a certain way, any story can be an entertaining story." The first piece of advice that I can give that will immediately improve your scripts is, drumroll please, in 5, 4, 3, getting to the point. Because I do animation, the longer the script I make, the longer the video will be, and the longer my team and I will have to spend working on the video, and the more depressed I'll get. So I've subconsciously gotten into the habit of writing shorter scripts that get to the point and cut out unnecessary and unfunny details. I feel like the American school system has brainwashed kids into thinking that the best way to express ideas is through the form of a 5-paragraph essay. Now, have you ever read a 5-paragraph essay that you wrote? They're boring as shit. And most schools require essays to have a minimum word count. So we are now training the next generation into purposely writing long-winded and wordy thoughts that could have been shortened down to a sentence. You've all written essays. You know all about repeating ideas you've already written, or saying the same thing over and over, or reiterating thoughts more than once, or echoing points an overabundant amount of times, or looking up words on thesaurus.com to hit that 500 minimum word count before. Well, you may not be ready to hear this, but you will not need to write 5-paragraph essays in your daily life. Shakespeare knew about this when in the 1300s he wrote, "Brevity is the soul of wit." Which is ironic, because he really liked to use a lot of unnecessary words. I once clicked on a video that was titled something like,
top 10 scary things that have happened when hiking or something. And I thought, yeah, that sounds like a good video to watch at 3 in the morning. And I swear, the video started out like,
whether it's to have a healthier lifestyle or to see the great outdoors, hiking is a wonderful activity enjoyed by millions of people across the globe of America. But sometimes, this wonderful activity enjoyed by billions can sometimes turn deadly.
Why are you defining what a hike is? We all know. Just show me the blurry photos of Bigfoot already until I'm too scared to fall asleep. So how do I come up with these video ideas? Well, I start by thinking, what can I rant about for hours? Something that makes me go, don't get me started on blank. And then I do get started and I write those thoughts on a Google Doc. And sometimes my thoughts are jumbled and incoherent, like I've been up all night watching Bigfoot videos, but I don't care. I just need to get these thoughts out of my head and splattered onto a piece of paper. And sometimes just starting to write will make me think of new ideas and I go, and another thing! And I repeat that process until the script's done. And then when I'm done writing the script, it's actually not even close to being done. Once I've finished writing, I send the script off to some of my friends and the Amazing, and they look over it with the freshest of eyes, and they'll give me notes saying, hey, you misspelled percent here, or hey, I have a joke you can add, or hey, wait, James, I thought I was your friend. And then I'll choose which of their jokes is the funniest and that I'm going to steal. Here's a fun little YouTuber behind-the-scenes fact. Since 2018, there's a circle of friends I have where we all trade and read each other's scripts and make suggestions and pitch jokes. And once I'm done reading someone else's script, I get to watch their finished video a month or two or 8 months later and see if the jokes I pitched made the cut. And then I get to smile to myself because no one knows that I was the one who wrote that joke because none of us credit each other because none of us care. Literally, the last 30 seconds of my Suobway Part 4 video was written by this kid named Infamous Swoosh. I wrote in my script, conclusion goes here. And he just wrote one for me, and I went, yeah, I'll use that. And not credit you. But it's okay, because we all don't credit each other equally, so it's a win-win. Everyone in the friend circle gets to look funnier than they actually are. Some days, I'll stumble onto a topic that I just know I'm going to make a video about, and then the scripts are a breeze to write. But then there are some days where I'm content with the world and I got nothing that gets me started. But I can't just not make a script that month. Otherwise, what would I make a video about? Random thoughts? I still gotta put bread on the table, and also my team would be out of a job. So on those days, you're basically forcing yourself to be creative on demand, which is not the easiest thing to do. But fortunately, I have a few tricks to get the creative juices flowing. It's called drugs. I'm just kidding. It's called Adderall. Wait. Okay, but for real, I do have this really complicated technique to get ideas, so write these steps down, okay? What I do is I get a pen and a notebook, put on some lo-fi, and just write. About nothing specific, just whatever my brain thinks is important. I am writing right now, with my left hand. Most people are right-handed, but I am special and am left-handed. I'm glad my teachers didn't force me to be right-handed. They were more concerned about my messy handwriting and horrible spelling. Usually the ideas don't come that quickly, but you get what I'm talking about. So many times at conventions, I'll be on a panel and people will ask for advice about starting a YouTube channel, and everyone on the panel will say, if you want to start a YouTube channel, you just gotta do it. You know, hit the upload button a couple of times. And I feel kind of bad for people who traveled far and wide to a convention and paid for a hotel and waited in line just to hear a bunch of YouTubers say, you just gotta do it. And it sounds cliche, but it's true. We either say that or be more entertaining, and that's rude, so. Recently, I went on tour performing a live show called Scribble Showdown. I'll talk more about it in the next video, don't worry. And before every show, we had a Q&A panel, and the most frequent question we got asked was, can you read my screenplay, and how do you get motivation? And the answer to that question is, no, and you don't. You get disciplined. Discipline comes before motivation. If you have a project you want to start or a skill you want to learn, you can't wait around for motivation to hit. Sometimes it doesn't come. Instead, you have to set a schedule where you say, okay, on this day, from this time to this time, I'm going to put in the effort to achieve my goal. And if you don't know where to start, a good first step would be to just get your goals into writing. Get your thoughts out onto something physical. So grab a pen and a piece of paper and just ask your friends to read your screenplay because I'm too busy.
so busy that I didn't even have time to record an end card.
I'm sort of stealing this idea from Jaden Animations.
Wait, no, that's not right. I'm not stealing it. I'm plagiarizing it.
Jaden did a video talking about random thoughts she had, and you should all go watch it. And I thought, hey, I think randomly sometimes. So Jaden, is it all right if I make a video about my random thoughts? I hope you say yes, because I just did. What is happiness? Well, it's a chemical in your brain. And how do you get that chemical? Well, it's just a little something I like to call drugs. I think humans make fun of hairless animals way too much. We think that all hairless animals are ugly. Just go to Google Images and type in hairless animal, and you'll probably think the animals you see there are ugly as well. But we all seem to forget that we're hairless animals too. If anything, other animals should think that we're ugly. So I look at this phenomenon and I have a theory. I think we humans find things covered in hair more cute. We're more attracted to things covered in hair. And that's why I'm a furry. My dad never taught me how to shave, and one time I cut myself shaving right above my lip, and for the rest of the day, all I could smell was blood. I don't know why I mentioned the dad part. You know how websites will ask you to type in a bunch of misshapen letters to make sure you're not a robot? That's called a CAPTCHA. And some of those CAPTCHAs are impossible. Sometimes I look at a CAPTCHA and think, am I a robot? I just wanted to send some email. I didn't want to question my identity. I wasn't ready for an existential crisis, Club Penguin. Sorry, that joke is dead. Just like Club Penguin. So here's the random thought. What if we lived in a robot society and robots had to prove that they weren't human to make a Facebook account? I think their CAPTCHA would be an optical illusion. Like, to sign into a website, it'll show two lines and say, prove you're not a human, which line is bigger? Optical illusions are like CAPTCHAs for people. Every time you paint a room, it gets a little bit smaller. And if it takes you one can of paint to paint an entire room, then the room gets smaller by one can of paint. You brought a can of paint inside the room, and you never took it out. Every time you smell something, molecules from that thing get sucked up into your nose, and that's how you're able to smell it. So that means every time you smell something, it gets a tiny bit lighter. Do archaeologists have lingo and jokes that only other archaeologists will understand? Like, there's a whole other world of jokes that I won't get to experience because I'm not an archaeologist. Like, one day, two archaeologists could be digging a hole, and one says, I'm not finding anything! And then the other guy says, well, you know what they say in the archaeology business. And I don't know what they say because I'm not an archaeologist. How about we look up jokes for archaeologists? Why did Robin Hood pull out of the archery contest? He found it an arrowing experience. Okay, get that one? It just wasn't that funny. Nor was it about archaeology. Or maybe it was, and I just don't get it. We'll never know. Where did Caesar keep his armies? Up his sleeveys. Okay, I had to get this one explained to me, but armies is supposed to be your arm, like your body arm, and your armies go up your sleeveys. Get it? Except Julius Caesar wore a toga, so he didn't even have sleeves. And you could just say this about anyone who had an army. Where did Hitler keep his armies? Up his sleeveys! Ah ha ha ha! When you ask someone what time it is, sometimes they'll say, it's a quarter to blank. And first off, I really hate that way of telling time, because now I have to use math just to know what time it is. Someone will say, it's a quarter to eight. Okay, so a quarter to eight, well, a quarter is 25, so 8 minus 25, it's like negative 13. Wait, no, we're using time numbers, so a quarter of 60, that's like 10 minutes, so 8 minus 60 over 4, you carry the 2, and oh, it's 8 o'clock now. We usually only say it's a quarter to when referring to whole numbers, but I wish people would use other times, like, hey, what time is it? Oh, it's a quarter to 8:37. Did you know that mosquitoes prefer type O blood more than any other blood type? Does that mean our blood tastes different? How can mosquitoes sense what blood type we are? Do mosquitoes think we come in different flavors? What if there was a restaurant for mosquitoes and the menus just had our blood types? Are there mosquito snobs? Like one mosquito would say, oh, I see you're drinking O negative. Of course you'd like that blood. Everyone likes that blood. I got that whole idea from a conversation I had with Jaden, and I said I was going to use it in my random thoughts video, so I'm just stealing everything from Jaden.
You know what I think would be a funny contradiction? A fedora with a Tumblr logo on it.
Whenever you leave for a trip, people will say, drive safe, which is fine. I always appreciate safe driving tips. But when you go flying in an airplane, sometimes people will say, have a safe flight. But I literally have no control if the plane flies safely or not. Why are you telling me to fly safe? I should be the one telling the pilot that. Hey, I just wanted to say that a lot of my friends are counting on you, so you better not screw this up. I appreciate the sentiment, but how do I fly unsafe? Maybe go on my phone before we take off, not watch the safety video? Blow the plane up? Why do people care so much about fashion? If I bought some really nice clothes and I go to a party, out of everyone in that room, I'm the only one who can't see what I'm wearing. unless I look down the entire time. I can go to a party and be wearing just a bunch of clown makeup, and as long as there's no mirrors around and everyone plays it cool, I would have no idea that I'm wearing anything. And also, it doesn't matter what I'm wearing, because I look good in everything. I think this whole YouTube thing has given me a confidence boost. I wouldn't say it's an unhealthy amount, but it's given me confidence that I didn't have in high school. My parents bought me a Pokemon shirt for Christmas, and yeah, I like Pokemon, but I don't want the whole world to know that. And in high school, I wouldn't have worn any remotely geeky shirt. But now, I can go outside and not even realize that I'm wearing my Pokemon shirt. And when I do realize, I usually think, huh, that's embarrassing. Ah, I'm the odd ones out, who cares? When my parents were my age, they already had a child. And here I am, wearing a Pokemon shirt. You know how different states in America will have different names for certain things? Like some states call it pop instead of soda, or how they call it a washroom instead of a bathroom, and apparently in Rhode Island they call a water fountain a bubbler, and everywhere else is just normal. Anyway, once I heard that down south, there's a phrase for when it's raining and the sun is still out. And that phrase is, the devil meeting his wife. Oh, isn't that so sweet? That means anyone can find happiness, even the devil. I love it when we give the devil more innocent and human characteristics. And given how few of times it rains in Arizona, I don't get to use that phrase very often. So already when it's raining, it's like, woo, it's raining! This day is gonna be great! But then when the sun's out, I get to say, look guys, the devil's meeting his wife! I hope they're happy together. Unfortunately, I misheard what that phrase was when I learned it. It's not the devil meeting his wife, it's actually the devil beating his wife. So I guess they're not happy together. I was so sad when I learned what it actually was. I don't know who this devil's wife is, but you need to find a new man, dude. And to think, I almost thought of you as an alright guy, Satan. I looked up that saying on Wikipedia, and in Tennessee they say, the devil is kissing his wife. So I guess in Tennessee, the devil's romantic, but everywhere else he just can't stand her. And the worst variation I could find has to be what they say in France. In France, when it rains and the sun's out, they say, the devil is beating his wife and marrying his daughter. Whoa, France! I'd expect that sort of behavior from Tennessee, but not you, France! Why do you have to be so dramatic to describe your weather? I don't want to even know what you call snowstorms. So anyway, those were my random thoughts. I swear I don't do drugs.
If you're one of those kids that spends too much time on that darn computer machine, then conventions are a great place to get the recommended amount of human interaction with others who share a similar interest. Or at least, they were. You might have seen some conventions in the news recently, you know, the ones like VidCon, Comic-Con, and E3, but did you know there's conventions for all sorts of different things, like coin collecting, pens, and degenerates? The first convention I ever went to was in Arizona called Phoenix Comic-Con. I was 16 years old, and it, no exaggeration, changed my life. I had heard a lot about geek culture online, but Phoenix Comic-Con was the very first time I witnessed it in its fullest. I was a very sheltered kid. It was the first time I'd seen a brony, and a furry, and whatever this is, in the wild. That changes a person. I was told that it was not cool to like geeky things, and as a 16-year-old, I tried really hard to make it seem like I didn't secretly like a bunch of geeky things. But people at Comic-Con just embrace nerd culture, like they didn't care what people thought of them or something. Is that allowed? I guess when I was 16, I was hyper-desperate to receive everyone's approval. I was so hyper-desperate that while walking around my first convention, I was stressing out that I wasn't in cosplay. Oh, all these pop culture characters are judging me because I'm not wearing any makeup. To this day, I still haven't ever cosplayed, but it looks like a lot of fun. If I did cosplay, I would want to go as this quadrupedic horse. Also Spark from Pokemon Go. I went to one panel called How to Make Steampunk Weapons, but instead of teaching us how to weld real-life weapons powered by steam, the people on the panel taught us how to paint Nerf guns to make them look like they were powered by steam. And that was, no exaggeration, the most disappointing panel I've ever been to. There was also a panel for bronies, but I was too chicken to go. Did I mention that my grandfather, who I'm named after, got drafted into World War II when he was 18? He fought in a war so I could go to a comic convention and be too nervous to talk to bronies. What a different life we had. At most conventions, people in the expo hall will sell a lot of super cool, unlicensed merchandise. Yeah, a lot of artists will sell prints and plushies and oven mitts with characters and titles they probably didn't get the license to sell, but if it's at a convention or on Etsy, then for some reason it's okay. I've always felt weird about buying that type of merch. On one hand, you shouldn't be allowed to make money off of someone else's intellectual property without the owner's consent. But on the other hand, look at this cool Bowser wallet, Bowser print, and Bowser bandana that I own. And this body pillow. It's a moral gray area because the people buying this type of merch are the hardcore fans. They know of the property these characters came from. They probably already own licensed merch of the character. The artist isn't claiming to have created the character either. It's a mutual understanding between buyer and seller that we both think Bowser is cool and we just want to buy as much merch as possible. You kind of have to take it on a case-by-case basis, but let me just say this to get it out there. You're not allowed to sell bootlegged I Ones Out merch. Phoenix Comic Con actually had to change the name of their convention to Phoenix Fan Fusion because the people at the San Diego Comic Con didn't like that Phoenix was stealing their name. So these conventions that don't care about stealing other people's copyright are forcing others to respect their copyright. Interesting. As some of you may know, since 2012, I have become a little more successful. And in 2019, I got invited to be a guest at Phoenix Fan Fusion, which is my home convention. The really crazy part is the convention put me in the celebrity line, like next to the people where you have to pay for photos and autographs. I didn't charge my fans for anything, so that made my line appear a lot longer than others. And my line was, no exaggeration, right next to Jeff Goldblum's line. I was gonna make eye contact with Jeff Goldblum! Jeff showed up for a couple hours on Saturday, and when he came out from backstage, everyone in his line and my line started wooing and clapping, and even I was like, woo! And then Jeff took a look at my line, then looked at me, and then gave me a nod of approval, saying, not bad, kid. He didn't say it out loud, but I could tell he said it with his eyes. He also said that I looked kind of cute, so oh, thanks, Jeff. The first time I went to VidCon, that also, no exaggeration, changed my life. Again, it was the first time I met all these YouTubers that I've been watching for years, and okay, I'll admit, at first I was kind of fanboy-y, but I've gotten completely desensitized meeting other YouTubers and feel no joy anymore. When I meet another YouTuber, I say, oh, you make videos in your bedroom? Me too. People know that you're a bedwetter too, right? No? That's just me then. If you've ever given me something at a convention, then you'll be happy to know that I've kept everything I've ever been given. Unless you're the guy that gave me a plastic baggie full of water and other junk and called it a homemade snow globe. I used to collect snow globes, so it was a nice sentiment, but I didn't want to take it home with me and have it inevitably break and get all the important fan art wet. So I chucked it. And as I'm telling you this, there's some poor kid out there going, hey, he's talking about my snow globe. He threw it away? And now I feel bad, so...
Here, I'll mail this to you and you can get a taste of your own medicine.
I don't know why this is such a popular question, but a lot of times people will ask me, what's the weirdest fan interaction you've ever had? I think they think that some of you are cringy. I never have an answer for them because all my fans are super nice. Yeah, someone gave me a bag of water, but that's not weird, that's nice! Okay, I have received fan mail from a prison, which is true, so I guess some of you aren't law-abiding citizens. Going to conventions and meeting fans and being on panels is a lot of fun, don't get me wrong, but it doesn't give you a lot of time to really experience the convention. Since 2017, when I would go to a convention, it would mean I was working. I still had a fun time, but I didn't really get to just relax with friends. That is, until I went to a convention last December called MFF, which stands for Midwest Fur Fest. Now, James, did you go to a furry convention? Well, I went with some friends to a furry convention so that I could actually enjoy a convention and not have to work. Although I still got recognized even though I was wearing a disguise. Furries are very touchy people, I've learned. Not touchy as in overly sensitive. Well, some probably are. But they're also literally touchy. Let me tell you where I'm at in my life right now. Last December, I was in an elevator full of furries and if my grandpa could see me now, he would probably be frowning. Or smiling, I don't know, I don't judge. We were all crowded in, there was a moose breathing down my neck, and we stopped at a floor because more furries wanted to come in. So I backed up to make more room, but I backed up a little too close to the moose, and he grabbed my hips and I went, ah! In my mind, I didn't say it out loud. In real life, I went, so that was probably the weirdest fan experience I've had, if you were still wondering. I don't know if he was a fan of my YouTube, but he was definitely a fan of my body. Or he was drunk. I don't know. Again, I don't judge. I was debating on whether or not I should include this story, but I think it would be a good lesson for everyone to hear. Here's my James PSA. This message is for everyone, and especially furries. Don't touch people without their permission. In the moment, I stayed quiet, but that sort of behavior isn't okay and I should have spoken out. Hopefully, most of you are mindful of other people's personal space. However, comma, at least one of you went to prison, so I don't know. Overall, it was the best ironic trip ever. At the end of the day, conventions are a lot of fun, and I really, really miss going to them. And when it's safe to do so again, I recommend you try and go to one you're interested in. And Grandpa, I'm sorry if I disappointed you.
Uncle James, can we play Space Explorer?
Shut up for a second. I'm watching this unnaturally charming preschool show.
Why are you watching a show for babies?
Okay, kid. This show is extremely sophisticated and can be enjoyed by both children and adults. So why don't you shut your ignorant mouth and find someone who actually loves you to play your silly little space game?
Crikey, Bingo! You can't say that to your sister! You have to say nice things! Treat others how you want to be treated, mate!
Oh, I really needed to hear that today. This episode of The Odd Ones Out is called... Are you familiar with the Australian animated preschool show Bluey? If your TikTok algorithm is anything like mine, you'll have seen a bunch of clips of this blue cartoon dog all over your For You page, paired with Subway Surfer highlights. Wow, TikTok, clips of a foreign preschool show? I thought you were supposed to cater to my interests. Let's read some of the comments on these Bluey TikToks, shall we? No shame, I'm a senior in high school, but I watch Bluey religiously, and this episode had me all in my feels. I'd say I had a good childhood, but I binge Bluey because adult life is so stressful and I'm sad, and it reminds me of a simpler time. Bluey is for everyone. I'm literally 27, and it's such a comfort show. Bluey is absolutely destroying me as a teenager who wishes he had this childhood. In my teen years, and watching full episodes of Bluey. Watching Bluey high is such a fun time, dude. Huh. You know, to me, I'm just thinking out loud here. It seems like a lot of these comments weren't made by preschoolers. What's going on here? Now, if your brain is anything like mine, you'll be thinking, why is this show about Australian dogs so popular with adults who don't even have children? In fact, why does Bluey have over 5 billion views on TikTok, is searched more than Paw Patrol, Peppa Pig, and Coco Melon, and why is this episode number 8 in IMDb's highest rated episodes of all time? This phenomenon intrigued me, and I was also bullied by a large number of people on my own team to watch the show. So, one day I sat down, put on the first episode, and... I watched all 141 episodes. Hang on, James! 141? But there's only 129 on Disney Plus! Don't worry, my fellow obsessive Bluey fan, we're gonna talk about that later. I work in cartoons, and I've been to furry conventions, so Bluey has always been on my radar of shows I'm aware of. And just from the clips that I saw, I adored the art style, especially the backgrounds. So much so that my very own background team has studied and taken inspiration from Bluey's backgrounds. Here you can see my backgrounds taking on a more Bluey aesthetic. I mean, just look at the colors, especially their greens. Oh my god! Doesn't just looking at these backgrounds bring a smile to your face? While I was watching the first season, I realized, oh, okay, I see why this show is so popular. Because it's genuinely a good show. We've already established that the show is great to look at, but the voice acting, the sound design, and the music are equally as amazing, so it's also great to listen to. While most, if not all, other preschool shows will hire adults who can sound like toddlers, Bluey gets actual children to voice the actual child characters. Somehow, every Australian toddler in Bluey can be so expressive and emotional. It's impressive that the show got such a talented cast of child actors who don't sound annoying to listen to. Or maybe it's just their Aussie accents that I like, I don't know. The characters have so much personality, and the comedic timing is something I've never seen before in a preschool show. I can't think of a single time Coco Melon has made me laugh this much, or even smile. The four main characters are Chili and Bandit, the parents, and Bluey and Bingo, the 6 and 4-year-old daughters. Yes, Bluey is a girl. You gotta catch up, dude. Come on, it's 2023. The show also does not hide the fact that it's Australian. It references multiple Australian locations and animals, they call flip-flops thongs, and they say things like, "Oh nor!" While some preschool shows focus on teaching kids numbers and letters, Bluey focuses on the relationship of the family and teaches its lessons through the make-pretend games that the family plays. And I want to emphasize how perfect these two parents are. These two are the most patient and emotionally aware parents I've seen... ever. There are multiple times where the parents apologize to their kids for, frankly, not even doing anything wrong. The dad is like the most perfect dad role model, okay? Check this out. Bingo was sad that dad didn't get to see the leaf bug outside. She was like,
Daddy, come and see. Come here, Daddy. Quickly.
But he was too busy playing with Bluey, you know, being a present father figure in her life. And at night, she's all boo-hoo about it, and he kneels down, gets to her level, and apologizes, explaining that he didn't hear her. Now, I don't have any kids, but if I spent my weekend running around with toddlers, and then right before bed, one of them said, you didn't get to see the ladybug, I would say, that's okay. I've already seen a ladybug. Good night. In one episode, Chicken Rat, Bingo lost her favorite toy, and Mom asks, well, where was the last place you had it? The two retrace Bingo's steps, and through flashbacks, we see this bizarre day that Bluey and Bingo had. The very first flashback we see, Bluey and Bingo are cooking a chicken rat egg while wearing weird costumes. And through this creative backward storytelling, we piece together what a chicken rat is and how the kids ended up in this situation. It's episodes like that which really make me appreciate the care that went into this show, and really sets Bluey apart from every other preschool show. Most preschool shows stick to a formula and talk down to the viewer, because typically their viewers are short. As a childless adult, I don't want to say, this show teaches you how to be a good parent, because I don't know how to be a good parent. But on paper, there are lessons in this show that are just as important for the parents to learn. So while watching season one, I got a feel for the world and characters. I started to piece together, okay, this show is depicting perfect parents. It's well written and wholesome. Anyone, regardless of having kids, can enjoy the show. Let's watch the rest, shall we? Season 2 and Season 3 is when things go from 100 to 1,000. This is when episodes cover deep and emotional topics that I think toddlers are too baby to understand. Let's see, there's the struggles of keeping romance in your relationship alive when you have two toddlers to look after, why taking time to play with your kids can have a ripple effect that lasts into adulthood, feeling inadequate as a mom, what it's like having a dad in the army, parents disagreeing on different parenting styles, moms getting tipsy, implied, dealing with infertility, abandonment, potentially a miscarriage, that one's still up in the air, and death. Actually, that one was in season one. You can't even compare Bluey to other preschool shows. Like, what the was Dora the Explorer even doing? Was she even trying to entertain the adults who are also going to be watching her show? Dora had the same formula every episode, and there was a map who sang a song that was just repeating the same three words 14 times. Season 2, there's an episode where Chili is telling Bluey about how when she was a baby, she wasn't crawling or rolling over as fast as the other babies in her mom group, and she compared Bluey's developmental delay to the other babies and felt inadequate as a mother. And then this pink poodle comes to console her, looks directly into the camera, and says, "You're doing great." I'm a he-him male with no kids, and I still get teary-eyed just thinking about that episode. People will tell you that Bluey is a kid's show that adults can enjoy too. No, that episode wasn't for the kids. It was directed at all the moms watching who are doubting their motherhood. When has Cocomelon ever done something like this? All the babies stop singing mid-nursery rhyme, look directly into the camera and say, "Hey mom, just wanted to say you're doing a great job raising me. Keep up the good work." Like, no, that'll never happen. I'm still not done talking about how impressive the writing in Bluey is, okay? So please indulge me for a bit. I'm switching into video essay mode as we do a deep dive into the themes and symbolisms of one of my favorite Bluey episodes, Flatpak. The entire episode is an allegory of human history told from a religious and scientific perspective, respectively. And it touches on the ever-growing relationships between a mother and child, all within 7 minutes. No, I'm not reading too deep into this. Let's begin. Bandit and Chili set out to build a new swing for their porch. And we get this great meta self-aware joke from Bandit when he complains about the instructions saying, I'm not taking advice from a cartoon dog. Meanwhile, the girls play games with the leftover packing materials that are thrown into the yard by their parents. Bluey and Bingo are given bubble wrap, which they pretend is water, so they pretend they're fish. Then they're given cardboard, which they pretend is land, so they pretend they're frogs. Then they're given tails and become lizards, then T-Rexes, then birds, then furry little animals. Is this chart starting to look familiar? Then they're monkeys, and then bipedal cave dogs.
What? Is that you, Mr. Darwin? Were these girls playing out the evolution of man through a silly game? Now, if you didn't like the evolution symbolism, I know you're going to love the parents being an allegory for the creators. You know, the big guy upstairs, the whatever you believe is going on. The parents supply the girls with their entire world. They give the girls the sea, the land, the volcanoes, and the trees. In these cave paintings the girls make that tell their history, they depict the parents as gods, higher up and in the clouds. They do look a little angry. Perhaps they're still in the Old Testament. The parents being the creators is hinted at again by Chili when she looks at the girls lovingly saying, "Aww, we made them." The parents give the girls an Allen wrench, aka tools, and one industrial revolution later, the girls evolve from cave dogs to modern dogs, building futuristic towns and spaceships. Throughout the episode, as the girls go through different stages of evolution, they also go through different stages of their lives as a mother and child. As fish, Bluey says that she's the mommy fish and Bingo is the baby. Then as frogs, Bingo pretends to be a toddler and Bluey teaches her how to catch flies. Then as T-Rexes, Bingo becomes a big girl. Then as cave dogs, she's a teenager. And finally, in the last stage, she's all grown up, ready to traverse the universe on her own. She thanks Bluey for looking after her and leaves on her spaceship. Bluey, now much older as shown by her having to use a cane, crosses the styrofoam threshold which represents her death and she gets to live with her creators. All while this orchestral masterpiece is playing and suddenly you realize you're crying? When did that start? And then Bandit ties the allegory all together at the very end saying, "Ah, this is heaven." Are you joshing me right now? This preschool show was able to tell a clever allegorical story with tasteful religious undertones in how many minutes? Did you just make me feel emotions over a cartoon dog? This isn't the only episode you can make an in-depth video essay on. There are plenty of other episodes that hit just as hard as this one. While I was doing research for this video, it got me thinking about another foreign animated kids show with 8-minute-long episodes that focus on a family of two toddlers. Except, unlike Bluey, this show is universally hated. Caillou, it's Caillou. I had this idea in my head that people only hated Caillou because he was a more accurate portrayal of a toddler. But in the handful of Caillou episodes I watched, I was reminded, oh no, that's why people hate Caillou. Because he sucks! His brattiness isn't even important to the plot, it comes out of nowhere. Caillou will be getting ready in the morning, he spills cat food and says, "Gilbert, look what you did!" He's at the beach and this bird who's done nothing wrong gets told to go away! And there's a bunch more examples of Caillou being a whiny piece of shit. And I can't help but think that Caillou's screeching, piercing, whiny voice does not help him be a likable character. I bet real toddlers can be little punks sometimes, but why would you show that in your cartoon and not have him learn any lesson? There's never a lesson learned in Caillou. Since Caillou was a brat all the time, a lot of people, myself included, wondered why Caillou's parents never disciplined or even tried to change his bratty behavior. But after I thought about it, I realized it would be a very weird episode of Caillou if one day Caillou's mom was like, "Caillou, what did you do to your sister?"
"I made her look pretty, Mommy."
"Caillou, that was Mommy's expensive makeup! How many times do I have to tell you not to touch Mommy's things? Come here, you little twit!"
"Mommy, why are you hitting me?"
"Getting a spanking!"
"Mommy, you're hurting me!"
"I've had enough of you, Caillou! I hate you!"
That kid got what was coming to him.
I don't know, maybe that episode would be cathartic to some parents. Anyways, getting back to the actual best children's show ever, even though Bluey is literally the most mentally intelligent and educational show for the minds of children, teens, adults, and parents, some unnamed mouse company decided to censor some of the episodes on their platform. It's the strangest things that got censored, too. This horse pooping, Bandit getting hit in the groin, Bandit saying the word groin, this hitchhiker is no longer from Argentina, that one's kind of weird, this pretend cat saying it will pretend pee on the curtains, Bandit hinting at wanting to get snip snip down there.
Adults, you know what I'm talking about. And the last 10 episodes of Season 3, which are some of the deepest episodes in the series, aren't even on Disney+. But that could just be a licensing thing, I don't know. I kept waiting for the infertility episode. I heard so much about it. I finally got to the last episode on Disney+ and thought, oh, okay, they're saving the deepest one for last. All right, let's do this. And the episode was about the family playing courtroom to determine if Bandit farted. I hope this video convinced you to give Bluey a chance. I mean, you're still here listening to a grown man talk about it, so you gotta be at least a little interested in it. Through its relatable and realistic portrayal of family life, the show has not only entertained, but also taught valuable life lessons to its viewers. The show's emphasis on play and family bonding is so refreshing to see compared to the usual fast-paced, mind-numbing shows aimed at kids. Bluey reminds us all the importance of spending time with loved ones and finding joy in the everyday. And if you still don't want to watch Bluey, have you thought about getting high and watching it?
Thank you all so much for watching this episode of James getting obsessed over something he probably shouldn't be. Did you have a favorite part about this episode? Yeah, that was my favorite part too. Just one quick announcement. My newest Oddballs book is available on my website right now, so if you enjoyed the show, be sure to head over and reserve your copy today. It'll be full of new stories and illustrations and will be released on September 6th, and I'm super excited to hear what you all think of it. Anyway, thanks again for watching. Big shout out to my amazing team. They really crushed it this video, and you better be wearing your seatbelts.
I'm at the supermarket, gonna cop some rhubarb. I reach into my pocket, it's time to get charged. I'm paying cash and I know what happens next is strange. I flash a stunning smile and say,
change.
Oh, what? Oh yeah, I'm a good person. You can have that money. It's yours. And also coins are uncomfortable in my pockets.
Sitting by my computer, mom comes inside the lair.
It's smelling like a sewer. You should go get some air.
I'm getting up and stretch, I'm filling up with pride. I open up the door and put a
single foot outside.
Oh, what? Oh yeah, I'm a good person. I leave my house, so help me. I'm gonna put my foot back inside of my house now.
My lifestyle's quite unhealthy. I snacked recording this. Got an expanding belly. Can't find a shirt that fits. From my chair to the kitchen, from a snack bowl to the brim. Yeah, I know that might look bad, but then I
sign up for a gym.
Oh, what? Oh yeah, I'm a good person. I'm a gym member. Don't get ripped. And I will go there sometime. I just haven't decided on a date yet.
I'm chilling out in class. My teacher's such a jerk. And suddenly he asks,
where is your homework?
All my friends in panic. No, is that today? I slap mine on the desk and say,
I'm gonna get an A.
Plus.
Oh, what? Oh, yeah, I'm a good person. I do my homework. Model student. Turns out I plagiarized and now I'm in detention.
My mom is back again.
Can you take out the trash?
Her mind was blown right then.
I did it before you asked.
Oh, what? Oh yeah, I'm a good person. I do my chores for my man. Couldn't find a trash can, so I dumped it in the ocean.
It's just a regular day, or is it grandma? No, someone's changing age and it isn't grandpa. Other grandsons may just write on Facebook walls, but I am grandma's special boy, so
I'm gonna call.
Oh, what? Oh yeah, I'm a good person. I remember birthdays. For example, for your age, you better think of me when you're drafting up your will.
I'm hanging out with Quinston. He is the coolest guy. Got 30k on Insta. Always wear suit and tie. I'll tell him about how good I am, but he says,
bro, the people who are really good don't brag about it, though.
What? You're saying that bragging about all the nice things you've done misses the whole point of doing nice things in the first place?
Oh, what? Am I a good person?
oh, and I gotta delete this song. Wait, it's already on YouTube and Spotify? Well, hopefully no one will listen to it.
Find things covered in hair more cute. We're more attracted to things covered in hair. And that's why I'm a furry.
Hey, James!
Hey! Furby? Everyone's gonna put on $2,000 animal costumes and walk around. Do you wanna come?
No.
But don't let me stop you from this hobby of yours. I may not understand why you like it, but as long as you're not harassing or hurting anyone, or anything, then do whatever makes you happy. Also, shower regularly and eat your vegetables. So, in the last video, I made a haha joke about being a furry. I said, given the choice between an animal with fur and one without fur, that most people would think the animal covered in fur would be cuter. And, ha, if we applied that logic to people, then everyone would be a furry. I got a mixed bag of responses to that joke.
Okay, I was looking at all the comments about James saying he's a furry, and in my opinion, it shouldn't matter. If James is a furry and he told you, that means he trusts you and thinks that you would accept him the way he is. I don't care, I'm not watching him anymore.
Well, that's really nice of you, Mr. Branch. But I still don't trust you. A lot of people were confused, so for the remainder of this video, every time I make a joke, it will be followed by this message. Two muffins are in an oven. One says, "Boy, it's hot in here." And the other says, "Yeah, you live in Arizona, what'd you expect?" But I'd say for the most part, you guys were very accepting. So that's good to know if I ever do want to come out as something. But if we wanted to talk about someone who is a furry, then look no further than 600 BC. You have to look pretty far. What am I talking about? I'm talking about this man named Aesop. Aesop. Aesap. Aesuabway. This man was the world's first furry. Okay, I'm calling him a furry because he wrote a lot of fables with talking animals in them, so I'm making fun of him for writing a lot of furry fanfiction. I'm making fun of a dead person. I made a video about a year and a half ago reading some of Aesop's fables, and that video is what this official Odd Ones Out shirt is referencing. Fables are short stories, usually with talking animals that have a moral at the end. Characters in fables don't have names. They're just simple, cookie-cutter characters. You don't have a fable with Michelangelo and Raphael from the Ninja Turtles. No, you have a fable with the tortoise and the other tortoise. So I'm going to read some more of Aesop's fables, but I'll be focusing on just one character. The fox. The fox gets around. You could pick any animal, and a fable exists with that animal being taken advantage of by a fox. The fox and the Triceratops. That fable probably exists. With the amount of fables the fox has been in, you'd expect him to be more moral than Gandhi. Aesop really liked foxes. His fursona was probably a fox. The fox and the goat. So once there was this fox eating some cheese, he wasn't looking where he was going, and he fell down a well. The fox had no way of getting out. Then a goat just so happened to be walking by and said, "Hey, what are you doing down there, you silly goose?" "Actually, I'm a fox," said the fox. "I was just drinking some of this lovely water. Is it good?" "Oh, it's only the best water in the entire universe." So the goat decided to jump down and join the fox. But then the fox used the goat. He used her as a stepping stool to get out of the well.
The website I'm reading this from has an interactive picture that shows the events that happened. Let's watch.
So then the goat says, "Whoa, buckaroo, aren't you gonna help me out?"
No.
"Instead, I'm gonna teach you a moral. If you had as much sense as you have beard, you would have been more cautious about finding a way to get out again before you jumped in. Look before you leap, you stupid idiot." Okay, goodbye. "But fox, you fell into the well too. You were the one not looking. The goat looked, you just lied to her. And you got away with it. So the real moral of the story is, you can abuse the people in your life with no consequences, as long as they end up dead in a well." The fox and the crab. This fable is pretty short. Once there was a crab who was tired of living next to sand, so he decided to move to a meadow.
And then a fox ate him.
That's the real fable! It counted as one of Aesop's 665. And the moral is, be content with your lot. Don't move, don't travel, Don't try and live in a better location because a fox might eat you! Just live in your studio apartment and deal with it!
The lion, the bear, and the fox.
This baby goat, he's a kid, went up to a lion and a bear and said, "Have you seen my mom? I haven't seen her in a couple of weeks. She said she was going to get some water and a pack of smokes, and she hasn't come home." But the bear and the lion didn't care. They started fighting each other over who would get to eat the baby goat. And then a fox jumped out of the bushes, killed the kid, and ran off with it. I wonder how much Aesop got paid for these. Again, the website has a very nifty interactive picture that shows you exactly what occurred. And the moral of the story? Those who have all the toil do not always get the profit. I'm not exactly sure what that means. Seems to me the moral should be, don't talk to lions and bears, and watch out for foxes. The fox and the grapes. Basically what happens in this fable was that once there were some grapes growing on a really tall tree. Do grapes grow on really tall trees? Maybe they did in 600 BC. And the fox really wanted some of the grapes. Do foxes like grapes? Maybe they did in 600 BC. And so he tried to get them himself, but he couldn't reach them. And since the fox didn't want to ask for help, probably because all the other animals hated him, he said, "Eh, I didn't want your sour grapes anyway." There are many who pretend to despise and belittle that which is beyond their reach. Which is where I think the phrase, money is the root of all evil, came from. People were upset that they couldn't get money, so they just said, "Eh, I didn't want your evil money anyway." Okay, here's the last fable. This one's kinda sad. The fox and the scorpion. So the fox, this whole time, had been gathering ingredients to make the perfect sandwich. He got the meat from an orphaned goat, a sautéed depressed crab, and some cheese. He was also going to get a side of grapes, but he decided to go without them. When all of a sudden, a scorpion comes up to him and said, "Hey, can I get a ride across the river? I'm too small to swim across." "Ha! Nice try, Slick. If I gave you a ride, you'd just sting me." No, if I did that, we'd both drown. It would be a lose-lose. "Yeah, right, I'll help you out. I've been acting like a huge jerk lately, all to make this one sandwich. But I'm gonna change starting now. For once, I'm gonna be helpful." So the fox gives the scorpion a ride, when all of a sudden... "Why'd you sting me?"
"Because I'm a scorpion. It's in my nature."
"Yeah, but you're a talking scorpion! I thought you'd have enough cognitive sense to know not to do that! You even said yourself that if you stung me, we'd both die!"
"Actually, I can hold my breath for 6 days."
"What?"
"Yeah, watch."
"My sandwich."
And then the fox died. He had no family, no friends, and no sandwich. And that's why you never help scorpions.
Lied to you guys. I pranked you. This fable wasn't the fox and the scorpion. It's actually the frog and the scorpion. The fox never got stung. He knows better than to help out another creature. Fox is too busy looking out for number one, baby. The frog's dead though. And if it makes you happy, the scorpion died too. And the fox got to enjoy his sandwich. Still alone, but the end. Man, what a plot twist. Aren't I so good at telling stories? So what did we learn, children? We learned don't ask for help. Don't help out others. Lie to people, take what you want, and you'll succeed.
The very first comic I drew was this fan-made Garfield comic that I did when I was like 9. This was the Garfield comic that came out when I was born. Okay, back to Twilight.
Hello?
James, we found it.
What? What did you find?
The Garfield comic, man!
So remember how I said the first comic I made was a Garfield comic? Of course you remember, I just showed you a clip of it. So apparently my mom kept it. That just amazes me. I need to call her, hold on.
Hello?
Hey, mom, I just want to say that you have a hoarding problem. Like, seriously, you need to throw some stuff away once in a while. Okay, bye. Man, I love her. Did you know the creator of Garfield, Jim Davis, is 70 freaking years old? And he's still making Garfield? How do you even... And he's made 14,000 comics? Oh, he has co-artists and he doesn't even draw them anymore. Well, I just lost a bit of respect for my hero. If you guys wanted to start reading Garfield, you have a lot of catching up to do. So you know I love Garfield. It was a big inspiration to me. So much so that the very first comic I ever made was about Garfield. And I know in the video I said that I made it when I was like 9. But looking back at this, I want to say that I was like 6 months old. It's that bad. So, everyone shut up, and without further ado, this is the very first comic I made.
Okay, let me explain some stuff. Let's go over this panel by panel. See how there's a graphic in this corner here? Well, Jim would make a unique graphic on every Sunday comic. So this is a Sunday comic, everyone. That means it's in color. Orange is a color. So the first panel, there's Odie, Garfield, and John. And John is saying, "Happy birthday! It's Garfield's birthday." And they're about to eat this physically impossible-looking cake. So there's this running joke in the Garfield comic that Garfield hates his birthday because he's getting way older. He's in his late 30s now! Jeez! So keep that in mind, because in the next panel... Wah! You might not be able to tell from the comic, but that's the sound of a fire truck pulling up. Because in panel number 3, there's firefighters saying, "Where's the fire?" And you know they're firefighters because this guy's holding a fire hose. That's a hose, okay? I was 6, you perverts! I just want to point out that I spelled fire like how it should be spelled. F-I-R. Really, this is the wrong way if you think about it. Fiery. In case you didn't get the joke, there's so many candles on Garfield's cake that it was enough to warrant a visit from the firemen, because Garfield is so old that he just has a bunch of candles on his cake. And then in the next panel, John explains to the fireman that there was nothing to worry about. My cat just having a B-day. Garfield's still confused, though. And then in the next panel, the cake is falling apart as we speak, and we hear another sound effect. It's beep, beep. Now, if we follow the speech bubble, we can clearly see that the sound is coming from the ceiling. John already knows what's happening because he says, "Oh no." And then in a brand new color, blue, it starts raining on them. It was the sprinkler from above. John runs away going, "Ah!" You know, something similar happened with sprinklers in the Incredibles movie. Oh shoot, I gotta call it The Incredibles 1 in case you're watching this after June 2019. So if I got inspiration from The Incredibles 1, which came out in 2004, that would mean I would be a minimum of 8 years old. So maybe I did make this comic when I was 9. That is, I'm assuming I stole that joke from the Incredibles movie, which I wouldn't put past myself. Alright guys, what if I told you there was a second Garfield comic that I made? I'm a little hesitant to show you because, I don't know what's going on in this one. So let's look at it and see if we can figure it out together. So it starts with a Garfield graphic. It's another Sunday comic. It doesn't seem as excited as the other one, though. Then in panel 1 we see... What is that? I think that's a toothbrush and that's toothpaste, and it says Teth on it. Okay, panel 2, John walks up to said Teth brush and Teth paste, and then he says, "They say you should use to pee big tooth paste." I was in honor classes, you know. Then it looks like he's about to brush his Teth with a massive Teth brush, and then, "Garfield, that's not pee, sis." And then, I don't even know. I don't know what that is. And then, there's 2? And one's green? And then we see Garfield say, "Yes, it is." So, like I said, I don't know what this one's about. I don't know what the joke is. I just don't get it. So I will make you an offer. I will give $20 to anyone that explains what this comic is trying to do. Actually, let's make it a prime $23. So $23 to anyone who can decipher this. I will be taking your guesses on Twitter and in the YouTube comments, and I will give out the $23 to whichever explanation I think explains the comic the best. So not necessarily the first person to get it will get the $23, just whichever one I see first.
I guess we're starting.
Hello, everyone. We're here to play a little drawing game, and I'm here with Jaden Animations.
Hello.
Hello. So what we're doing is we each chose a Pokemon. We're changing the type of the Pokemon. Let's get started.
You have to change Beedrill into a fighting type.
Beedrill is a pretty dope Pokemon, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You have Farfetch'd, and you have to change him into a psychic type.
A psychic.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Beedrill was on my team.
Did you enjoy him?
He has this move called Pine Needle.
I think it's Pin Missile.
He hit it more than once. He hit the Pokemon more than once.
Yeah, it's Pin Missile.
No, I think it's Pin Needle. Or Twine Needle or something.
What was your original team?
I do not remember. I chose Squirtle because I had Pokemon Blue. And I thought since it's blue, then I should get... I was a little kid, all right? Squirtle's going to be the best because this is a Pokemon Blue. And I want to say a Parasect was on my team too.
Really? He's like one of the weakest Pokemon, honestly.
When they're level 100, though, then...
Beaks from the front are weird.
If this is an actual Pokemon, it'd be terrifying.
Mm-hmm. Because he's, like, really big.
It's kind of weird that he was on my team, because as a kid, I was terrified of bees.
Really? I'm scared of bees, too, actually.
Yeah, I got stung. Maybe this could be a video, but I got stung twice from bees, and so I've always just never been able to forgive them for that. I don't know what you're drawing. I don't know how you're taking the rules. I just
drew him with boxing gloves on. I heard a story about Farfetch'd. I heard it on the internet. Apparently there's a saying in Japan where a duck holding a leek is abnormal, out of this world. And so having a duck carrying a leek is Farfetch'd. I can't really put shorts on a bee, though. That'd be weird. I tried. I'm taking creative liberty with what I'm doing right now.
People in your last video, I read some comments and they thought I was cheating. But you know what? I wasn't cheating, and I'm taking that as a compliment. Hate all you want.
I couldn't help myself. Okay, here is Beedrill as a fighting type.
And Farfetch'd as a psychic. Oh my gosh, that's you like jazz? Oh, it's such a meme.
It has a third eye. Oh, that's cute.
All right, next one.
The one you have to draw is Stantler.
Yours is Meganium, but you have to change him into a ghost type.
Ooh, you have to change him into a poison type.
Like Zoink Scoobs.
What am I going to do differently than just making it transparent? Have a sheet over its head? Trying to use all my creative juices right now. So I went to PAX, and I met up with one other YouTuber. He does Pokemon videos, so
oh, really?
this is a relevant story. His name is Mand JTV Pokevids. He met up with me at PAX and was like, oh, hey, how's it going? Then I followed him on Twitter. I sent him a DM. I sent him a picture of my Breloom plush, and I said, it's the best Pokemon in the world. So I also sent him a picture of my dog, so I said, and my dog. And then he said, sent a picture of a figurine of a Sceptile, which is his favorite Pokemon. And then he sent a picture of his girlfriend, and he goes, and that's my dog. But then he said, oh, my girlfriend approved of that joke. So like this flower right here, I was thinking of like, oh, make it a ghost sheet. But that just ended up looking like the Breloom tough.
There's not too many like defining features of poison types.
I was thinking you'd give him vampire teeth.
Deer anatomy is weird.
Tell me about it. I have a Word document and I made notes for each one. I only wrote one note for this one and it's just bubble butt. Do you believe in ghosts?
This topic.
Yeah. I mean, I could cut it out. I don't have to be in this.
What about you?
No. Is it good? Is it bad? Yeah. Put a happy little dead tree right here, you know?
Happy little dead tree. This is my poison Stantler.
This is my ghost. What's it called? Bay leaf?
Ooh, spooky.
Okay, I like that.
I made it like poison barbs. I didn't give him ears!
Can I fix it? There, I fixed it.
Okay, I fixed it too. This is the real one.
The one you have to do is Wailord.
Ugh.
And its new type is flying.
You have to do Cacturne, but he's fairy.
Ah, this is the same one that the Team Rocket people had, right?
They had the baby one. Did you know that Wailord can actually fly?
It can?
In the Pokedex entry, it says, like, his weight, and it's lighter than air, so he can technically fly.
Aren't a lot of the Pokedex entries messed up? The balloon Pokemon.
Where he drags children.
That murders kids.
I wonder if I should give him a little beak.
I remember when they had a new evolution announced, but they didn't know what type it was. Some people were guessing, oh, it's a new type. It's fairy type. I remember thinking, like, no, that's not right. They're not just going to make a new type. We gave drawing tips in your video. We want to do any drawing tips here?
Should we?
No. Okay, well, you're going to have a lot of free time.
Oh, are you not done?
am I not done? So we replaced those circles with hearts. If I was coloring this, I'd color it pink.
But like a dark pink?
No.
Because he's still a bit evil. Oh, are you taking out all the evil?
How evil is he? Are any Pokemon really evil?
The balloon Pokemon seems pretty evil.
They can understand people, though, because we tell them what to do, and they listen to what we don't tell them what to, because they're not real.
In the Pokedex entry for Latios, it says it's one of the few Pokemon that can understand human speech. And everyone's like, excuse me.
Valentine's Day is coming up.
Happy Valentine's Day, here's a Cacturne.
You're the one-eyed prick.
Sounds like an insult.
It's kind of giving you the ooh eyes. I like how it turned out. I'll write my name next to it. I mean, actually, I can change the color, because this is a computer. Look at that. I like it.